Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back, and we are ready to rewind this episode of 49. And it was a good episode. We have some topics that we keep thinking we've talked about before, but haven't. And so I'm really excited to get into the nitty gritty of what we're going to be talking about today.
I think we're at the point where we can, like, I know there's a lot of discontent around Survivor 49 in the overall Survivor community right now, and just production, like CBS screwed over this season. Like, I think we can clearly say that now. There's too much hype for 50, and it's overshadowing everything that's happening this season. This season's really enjoyable.
It'll be a lot better.
Yeah, and I know Will's been preaching that exact philosophy all season, McKenna. But yeah, we had like a couple of dud episodes in the beginning of the season where, you know, things were predictable. We had the disaster tribe and everything. We were building up and we're wondering, okay, why is Hina not here? What's going on? But every week, I'm just like, this is the best episode of the season. Mm-hmm. And I can't truly, like, maybe it was maybe 46, maybe 47. Maybe it was that recently. Maybe it even goes back further, where I was constantly thinking, this is just escalating the season more and more week to week. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we have this like burden of knowledge that we know who's on 50. Mm-hmm. But like I was saying last week, right? Like, we're in the zone where Tiffany was an eighth place finisher. Like, Rizzo and Savannah can go at any time now. So there is suspense in this. And while this episode was edited in a way where neither of them seemed to be in danger, it was still exciting. There were still so many questions, right? Like, it's not just like, oh, does Rizzo play as idol here? We got completely, like, blindsided by something that Rizzo does in this episode that nobody really saw coming. We had a lot of strategy talk, a lot of great strategy talk. I mean, I Sophie Segretti is emerging as one of the people in the season who actually seems to be important to the narrative that's going on. And it's so exciting, because there was a point in time where lots of the community was ready to write her off, right? Like, Phil still is at a point where he's like, well, maybe we write her off because, you know, she had that episode 3 no confessional. However, he also noted on Digging Deeper yesterday, it's kind of an Erica situation where she didn't go to any of the pre-merge tribals. So, like, maybe she just wasn't relevant to that portion of the game, and we didn't need to be introduced to her until the merge, when she does emerge as this massive threat in the game. I am loving this season at this point. Like, I'm ready to say, like, this is definitely in the top half of the new era seasons for me.
For sure.
And we'll see where it goes in a conclusion, but I'm excited to watch Survivor every week. Mm-hmm. And that is with a massive returning season looming. And that's no small feat. I have to commend the Survivor 49 cast for actually delivering something that is so entertaining to watch.
Yeah, that's why I'm just like ready to dive into the podcast. I know we typically have a little bit of preamble, but I just want to get into it. So our outwit moment this week is flipping on the flippers. And this is where we are talking about Sophie, about Sage and Juwan. And like Sage is saying that she's with Savannah and Rizzo and locked in. But Sage then turns to everyone else and is like, all right, we got to go for Savannah now. And then they're still going to use their votes to go for Steven. And then they're like, wait, no, that's not what we should do. Someone's clearly trying to get you out, Savannah. Why not? Let's just flip the votes on either Sage or Juwan. And we can do that easy with our three votes plus the extra vote. And then they're like, but we should involve Yellow Sophie in this. We don't want to leave her out. So let's just have her pick because she's now in the swing position. And this is where we get Cass and Sarah and Kagyan. We feel like we've talked about this moment so much, but in this light, I feel like it just matches pretty well with what is going on in 49 between Sage and Juwan and Sophie.
It's very similar because Sage is in this similar position to where Sarah was, and not as being as bombastic as Sarah was in Kageyan. Mm-hmm. She's not, you know, demanding everyone follows her plans and stuff. In fact, she's been quite passive in comparison to Sarah.
Right.
Where she's constantly said, we should vote out Savannah, we should vote out Savannah for the last several weeks. But no one is going on to that. But she's not pushing it so much that it's like, no, this is the only option we have. She's mm-hmm. been more of a team player than Sarah was in Kageyan. Right. But the big thing is it does seem to be brought on by these like post-swap dynamics. Because Sarah mm-hmm. really does become part, like despite starting on that Braun tribe, really does become integrated in that Apari tribe with the Alexis boot, because she's in that middle position there, and that's where she really gains her powers, in that middle position. And it's the same thing that we see with Sage and her relationship with Steven, right? I have to commend the editors, which is something I don't do very often. Most of the time I'm condemning them, but I have to commend them, because the cut from the conversation where Savannah is explaining to the original Ulis that they and Sophie Bellardi that they should get out Steven at this point, they have the numbers to do it, we can just vote out Steven. And that hard cut to Sage just sitting there and being like, no, in a confessional, was absolutely brilliant. Like, it was fantastic editing, and it made me so excited. It was just like, this is incredible, because it's building this, we've been having this building tension between Sage and Savannah that seemed kind of one-sided from Sage's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so wonderful. It's so great to see it, which is why I love Sage as a character. This is why Sage is easily my favorite person on this season. She is so fun. And the editors are just spinning her in a way where it makes it exciting. And the comparison to her and Sarah in this position is so fascinating. And no, Sage doesn't go here like Sarah does in Kageyan. Mm-hmm. But I think that's because she's playing this more passively, right? Because we see that conversation. We see Sage's name get thrown out there as a possibility to go here, right? Like, it is possible she goes. Rizzo's kind of pushing it. Savannah kind of wants it. But in the end, we see Juwan being the one who gets it. And that feels like that other half of that Kageyan vote where the Apari Alliance decides to vote for Jeffra.
Yeah, and having what I really loved was actually the Trish conversation to Cass of like, "Hey, if you could have anybody leave, who would it be?" Oh, probably Sarah. I could make that happen. And then it's similar to Savannah talking to Sophie, being like, hey, so this kind of thing is happening. Can we vote out Sage or Jawan? Which one do you want? And then Sophie makes the decision, and it's really involving that other person who is not necessarily part of your alliance or part of the core. Mm-hmm. And giving them some agency and feeling like they belong without, like, you're still getting your agenda across, but with making them feel like it's also their agenda.
Absolutely. And I think it's really important to keeping people together. There was something very interesting that was said on the Know-It-Alls this week between Rob and Steven about this idea that, like, four is the new three in Survivor, where a final four, because of forced fire making, isn't as, like, you're not as on the bottom and out in a final four like you used to be before forced fire making. And it really got me thinking, like, there's no detriment to being the fourth in an alliance anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And in that Kageyan vote, there's so much discussion about, okay, who's the bottom of that six? Because if they take out one of our side, you're still on the bottom, you can go, right? Like, they still have the numbers and they can vote you right out afterwards. And we see Tony say that to Sarah, and we also say Trish say that to Cass in that episode, and as the way to do it. And we don't have to deal with that here, which is so fascinating. It's a facet of the new era. I've never even really considered the fact that, like, because of forced fire making, you always have a chance to sit in final three if you're in a four, if you can get to that final four seat. So being so welcoming to Sophie Segretti here and welcoming her in, especially after Savannah Rizzo and Sophie Bellardi have really taken advantage of the reactions to Sophie Segretti coming back from that split tribal council and used it to build a relationship with her, giving her this opportunity of choosing who to go for is fascinating. It's just one of those instances in Survivor where you are building connection through actual gameplay. And sometimes I think we lose that perspective of Survivor, that idea that it's actually not just the personal connections you make, but the strategic connections you make that can actually form stronger bonds. And that's what we see the Ulis doing with Sophie here.
Right. And what I think is interesting to contrast this is Xi'an in Thailand, where she feels annexed by her OG tribe. We have this weird one world situation, and now she's ready to flip, but Jeff never said that it was a merge. And so her tribe flips on her because she no longer has the power. And it's just such a different situation, but it's still, like, at its core, very similar to what's going on, because they feel exiled from an OG tribe, like Xi'an, Sage, and Jawan. And then they catch wind of everything that's going on, and then it all flips over on that one person.
Yeah, and that's really... Obviously, Thailand feels so weird to talk about in this situation, because it's the bad beats situation, where it's like, hey... You, like, Xi'an was making the correct game move with the knowledge she had in that situation.
Right.
That I have to flip here. There's no reason to stay with Suchai. I should go with the Chuigongs. I should really work to cement myself and move myself further into the game. And then we get the, I never said a verge.
Yeah,
it literally was production just like setting her up for failure. This is what they wanted, though. Like, it's very clear this is what production wanted in this situation, and Xi'an just delivered. It's why we get her three seasons later. It's why she comes back for All Stars, right? Because there has to be a bit of production being like, oh man, we did Xi'an really dirty here.
Yeah, exactly. Especially because she could have, you know, risen in the ranks like Cass did. Cass lasted so much longer than people thought a flipper would last. And so Shein could have been that vote to take out some of the people who have been on the same tribe together.
Well, and it's very interesting in Thailand, and it makes sense why Shein is the person they target here, because she's clearly not in with the rest of the Suchis. But you also go into that with, it was a 5-5 split in Thailand, right? Going into that fake merge. And it just, you know, gets exasperated by the fact that they decide to keep doing this for two more tribal councils where Suchai can just lose and vote people out. So we can still get the Art Pagonging at the merge. But that, the thing with Shein is like, she's also in the situation, but it makes a more disparity than where Sarah is in Cagayan, right? And it makes it more of a disparity. And because we're a little later on in the merge here, it's so interesting in 49 seeing that finally flip on Juwan. And we do know there's some a little more context as to why the vote ended up on Juwan now, based on the secret scene we got with Sophie Polarity going through Christina's bag, finding what she assumed was an idol. So they just didn't quite feel comfortable putting the votes onto Steven anymore. But the fact that it's Juwan here is, and I think like Juwan's the important one because he does seem to be the most, I was a little confused when it ended up on Juwan instead of Sage. Obviously, clearly they think Juwan's a bigger threat to win the game. We see Sophie Segretti say that in her confessional. But I think a lot of it also comes to the fact that Juwan's been the one who's been flipping the most, right? Like, he's the one who's been so gung-ho going both sides and really playing this middle. And we've seen this hunt for people in the middle this season.
Yeah, and Juwan has, you know, has been with Savannah and has been with Sage. He's like, oh, I want to work with Savannah. And then now coming back together with Sage, Sage telling him all the stuff that she's been dealing with Savannah. He really has been like partnering with her and like going back and forth between all of his different relationships.
Yeah, and it's what's making 49 so interesting is the fluidity of it all. And even though it doesn't seem like it's fluid because we have these two opposing sides going after each other, because there's been so many people playing the middle, it's made it really interesting. Like, I get Savannah now, McKenna. I've said on previous podcasts that, like, I don't know if Savannah's really, like, doing it for me. I don't know if she's really this character who I enjoy. But seeing her talk to Christina this week, I was just like, yep, yeah, I'm in. I'm all in. You just boldly say, who are you voting for like that? It's like, yeah, I respect this a lot. And I get why she, was brought back for 50 now. Like, I get it. I get the character of Savannah. I understand it. And she is refreshing in the landscape of everything we're seeing. And I really appreciate her ability to take a backseat here. She suggests, let's flip on the flippers and then let everyone else decide which of those flippers they're going for.
Yeah, and it's not even Sage who is the one throwing out her name. It's Juwan, the partner in crime.
Yeah, it's just, it's the fact that she doesn't feel the necessity to push for Sage here, much in the way that, like, Katz feels the necessity to push out Sarah's name there.
Right.
It really does show how well she's playing this game.
Now, moving on to our outplay portion of the podcast, we are talking balancing stuff while going over balancing beams. So we have here, they had to balance these massive puzzle pieces on pedestals. And typically, when we see this happen, it's either letter tiles or pattern tiles that they have to navigate with a sword or machete. They at the end of the machete, like in how we have, what was it?
Korra.
Korra. I just wrote down what the challenge was, not the season. Like we have in Koh Rong, and they have to crawl under a net and then slide the tiles into the gong and then stack them and move over the balance beam. But it's so different trying to navigate these tiles versus these big puzzle pieces, because weight difference and the teeter-totteriness of smaller tiles, and it's it was really interesting to see them do it with like a bigger puzzle piece at the end.
Yeah, because these puzzle pieces they used this week were thick. They were some thick puzzle pieces, and they were kind of hard to discern how many people were taking, I found. I don't, on rewatching the episode, it just seemed like we saw a couple people take like one or two. There's definitely an instance where I think Rizzo takes three.
Yeah, someone takes four, I think.
Yeah. And it's just like
oh my gosh, this seems crazy.
What's that limit? Like, where does it go, right? Like, and I mean, if you're slow and steady, there's nothing preventing you from taking all of them at the same time. It's just you might have to try a couple of times. So
yeah,
there's a little bit of thing there. Whereas with these smaller tiles in Koh Rong, right? Like, this is, it's more involved. The tiles are more involved because of like the shuffle board and so the gong aspect of it all. And then the fact that the tiles are part of this puzzle afterwards, which I guess is the same thing because it's just a jigsaw puzzle. Mm-hmm. But them being smaller does make it a little harder. Just like even the mechanics of holding them, right? Where we have the pedestal that they're using in 49 versus the tip of the machete.
Right.
It's not really the tip. I guess it's technically the edge of the machete, but still.
Yeah.
Like the flat face of the machete at the end. It's just your control is a lot different. I think the 49 balancing is a lot easier than this.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that I think them being thicker and getting taller does make it a little more difficult. I would probably be a little more cautious in that situation and not go all out. But I think you are more likely to overestimate how many you can take at a time when you have these smaller tiles like in Koh Rong.
Yeah, and having to, I feel like also you have a little bit more wiggle room with something like these bigger puzzle pieces than you do with like a shakier, I feel the shakier you are, the easier it is for some tiles to fall off the machete. And it is this like balancing act, mm-hmm. pun intended, of how much do you take at once, and then how is more trips slower for you, or trying to go slower with more things stacked on your pedestal or machete going to be faster for you? Because we also have a different variation on this challenge in South Pacific where they have to do rice bowls and they put a beanbag on their head with a bowl of rice and have to navigate these balance beam courses and fill the bowl to a certain height. And do you take big bowls and go slow across these beams? Do you take smaller amounts so it doesn't topple over on your head? Like, all three of these challenges really have like a puzzle, elevated puzzle element to it.
It's the strategic element of these challenges, right? Like we, with much chagrin, talk about how often we get these, okay, here's another survivor obstacle course ending mm-hmm. in a puzzle or whatever, right? And it's yeah. nice that the South Pacific one isn't that, and it, mm-hmm. it is just more, how confident are you in your posture and your ability to hold rice on your head? And I think that's really what varies it from these other two variations of this challenge, mm-hmm. where you have people balancing on things in their arms. There's just so many more mechanics involved with your arms and mm-hmm. more points where you can kind of make a goof and drop those things, especially in the machete where you're dealing with it long out instead mm-hmm. of the pedestal, which you can keep kind of close to you. But when you're balancing on your head, it's all about how much you're able to stand mm-hmm. straight and stand tall and be able to walk that way, which I think is almost a little more difficult because it is part of your core body, which mm-hmm. you're using for the balancing, where your arm, you can kind of separate a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, but what I was trying to say is like, this adds a strategic element to these challenges that don't seem to have any at all, that are just these obstacles mm-hmm. of get through this. But when you actually get to a point where it's like, okay, I have to think this through, because the difference between me attempting to take all of these in one go and dropping and having to attempt it four times and just taking two trips is massive.
Mm-hmm. And I really do have to like talk about these challenges, because I feel like they are getting a lot better, because while watching 48, I just felt, here's another obstacle course and a puzzle. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, this is what we have, an obstacle course and a puzzle, but it didn't just end in the Survivor 49 jigsaw. They used an element of a previous challenge and put it in here. You had, you know, the buoy swing, and it just feels like they're slightly tweaking some older elements to certain challenges and putting them in and making these challenges feel a bit more fresh and more new without going crazy outside of the box or making a huge spectacle of a challenge. Like, they've had rope tubes before, but now they slapped a teeter totter on it, which they've had teeter totters before. So it's like it's just combining elements of certain things here. So they've had the pedestal with balancing a ball on it. They've had the machete with balancing puzzle pieces. All right, smack them together. Puzzle pieces on a pedestal. Let's go.
The production team has really enjoyed teeter totters this season.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's sometimes you see that production has this like, I know what we'll do. We'll add a teeter totter. Because we had like that water totter earlier in the season, mm-hmm. right? That mm-hmm. Jeff referred to as a water totter.
Water totter, yeah.
And I think he referred to this one as the tunnel totter, too.
Yeah,
So it's just fascinating to see, like, what production gloms onto in challenges. Mm-hmm. I'll say this. I would really like I do agree with you, McKenna, where we do see a bit of variation to make things a little more interesting. Give me something other than a logo jigsaw puzzle, though. Like, I am so sick and tired of it at this point. I want a new unique puzzle, or even an old puzzle. Give me like one of the old trickier puzzles, right? Like the hanging bat puzzle or the fishbone puzzle, or even like, heck, I'll take like the flame puzzle at this point. Like something interesting. Interesting than the logo.
What could have been interesting is I think there's like 6 or 8 pieces to the rotating like flower puzzle or skulls. It's been in like Panama and things like that. We could have done that. We're transporting those like twisty puzzle pieces instead.
Yeah.
Then we can go to our Outlast moment. John, do you have any more on Outplay?
Nope. Let's keep going.
All right. Outlast. And we're talking about playing your own fake idol. We've talked about fake idols before in the sense of I'm hiding a fake idol and intending for someone else to find it and play it. But here we have Rizzo playing his own fake idol. I caught him with the axe hacking something off of a torch. And I was like, I feel like that's going to come up later. And it did. And Rizzo was just like gauging the crowd for playing this idol for Savannah. I think mainly gauging Sophie to see if she went along with Juwan or Sage for the vote, and seeing where she stood to see if he actually had to play his idol.
The interesting thing about Rizzo playing this fake idol is, first off, no one expected it. Like, when Rizzo stands up to play an idol and he says, here's a fake idol, or in just like, this is not a hidden immunity idol, it is a, oh my God, what moment? It makes sense why we get this shocked reaction from the mm-hmm. jury. It's you're questioning, why is he doing this? And I think we're still questioning. Like, there's speculation, right? There's speculation mm-hmm. out there. Is he using this to gauge the reactions of certain people in the tribe to see who they voted for and what will go down here? Is he trying to obfuscate the fact that he does have the idol and, like, kind of, like, pretend like he lied about having the idol?
Right.
Because if you think about it. If you think about it, I can't remember exactly. I have to go back and look at the Matthew boot to mm-hmm. see how many votes were red in that situation. Mm-hmm. If there was one less vote red, like maybe there's a chance that Rizzo could like try to pass off that he didn't actually find this idol, because no one was actually there when he found it, right? Like, everyone knew that he found the clue for it and that he had the clue, but no one was there when he actually went out into the ocean and grabbed this idol. So mm-hmm. maybe there's a chance he can like obfuscate this from Jawan in this situation, but like Jawan's literally the only person it matters to who was there. So not sure exactly what's to gain out of playing this fake idol. And of course, Rizzo hasn't said anything, so we don't know. So Rizzo, I mean, if you want to tell us, if this is just like showmanship, if this was just like, hey, this is something funny and quirky, maybe it gets me on season 50. That's cool too. But like, Rizzo, tell us. Just tell us. I know you're listening. Just tell us. But like you said, McKenna, like a lot of the times when we get fake idols, they're not to do something like this, right? Like fake idols, you think of fake idols and you think of like malicious fake idols to kind of dunk on people, like Randy Bailey and Cerrado DeBone, right? Like those type of like where you give it to someone to make them feel comfortable, or you hide it, like with David did with the fake idol he made in Millennials versus Gen X, and like just to hope that Jay found it so that Jay's not out there looking for it.
I'm glad you brought that up because we are actually going to go with Dom as one of our examples here, because he found David's fake idol. It did not mature into a real idol. It is still a fake idol, but in Ghost Island, he could then use this fake idol to do something with it. Can he, do you want to replant it and see if someone is feels comfortable, like we were talking about, or do you want to play it yourself to see if you have to play your own idol? And this is what Dom does. He presents it to Jeff, and it's also really believable because we have all of these relics. Nobody knows if it's fake, if it's real. We have these relics coming back. So it's really interesting that David's idol didn't mature into a real idol. It's a fake idol, and how to navigate that when it's like not something you created. It's an advantage that you got in the game of a fake idol.
Yeah, and like you said, it's really playing into the theme of Ghost Island. And that's the thing, is because we've seen things mature in the season. And that's the fascinating thing about how they approach. Honestly, Ghost Island was not a bad concept. They just did it a little too much. Sometimes that was one of the things production did during that era when they're coming up with themes and stuff. Sometimes they push the theme a little too hard. And Ghost Island was one of those instances. But this is kind of our first instance of really seeing someone use a fake idol like this, right? Because we've seen fake idols before. You even had a point where in Game Changers, one of the options that Debbie had when she went on the Cochrane cruise was to get a fake idol kit. And a lot of people are just like, why would you do that? Like, what's the necessity of doing that? Like, why would you get this? And we really see Dom kind of push that boundary of how to use an idol. Because it's similar to the way that Rachel used her Shot in the Dark in 47, right? This idea of gauging things to see whether or not that idol needs to be played by checking people's reactions. If people are down and disappointed by how things are going, okay, well, maybe I need to play my idol then because I'm the vote. But because we've seen it happen now, we've seen it happen a few times now, maybe this leads into like that next level strategy where if someone goes and plays an idol, you have to like remain as calm as possible no matter what, because it could be a fake idol being used to gauge how exactly they're to play their real idol. Maybe it's more telling when someone plays their own fake idol than anything else.
Yeah. And I also, what's a different kind of take on this using the fake idol is Nick and David versus Goliath with finding a fake idol in front of everybody, being like, oh, we're all sitting at the boat. Convenient. I hid a fake idol here. Let me dig this up. And everybody sees you find a fake idol and think you have a real idol to then eventually use it later. But Dom didn't find it with someone, and Rizzo, I guess people were around, but he didn't like find it and be like, oh, an idol, like Nick did.
So the interesting thing about Nick's situation is he just had this fake idol ready to go with his parchment for his real idol and was like, hey, look, I'm sitting here. Oh, I just was digging around under the raft and I found this idol. How crazy is that, guys? Mm-hmm. And he was kind of using it as a way to deter things against him. But it kind of turns against him because Davey, he's like, oh, does Nick have two idols now? Like, that's not good, because Davey knew about Nick's real idol. Mm-hmm. And it kind of turned the tides against Nick for a little bit, to the point where he plays this idol as a way of gauging everyone and gets it wrong, because he plays his real idol right afterwards and doesn't get a single vote against him.
Right. And you really have to be able to, like, have those correct reads that Rizzo had this episode of, nobody is like, oh crap, he played an idol for Savannah. We, like, to be able to play his own, he saw that everyone was like, you wasted your idol? Question mark.
I that's why I don't feel like he was gauging people with this idol play, because it doesn't make sense, because he knew.
That's how I just want to view it, is like he was gauging people, because otherwise it is like the showman trying hard to win America's Favorite. And like, I want there to be strategy in this idol play.
I think there is strategy in it. I just don't know if we know what that strategy is yet without Rizzo saying it. Maybe we get a confessional at the top of next episode that explains this. Actually, it would be really nice. Survivor Production, please do that. Like, just tell us why he played it, please. Because it doesn't feel like I gauge things. Because between, I'm very confident, like, Rizzo knew his vote. He knew Savannah's vote. He knew Sophie Bellairdi's vote. And he knew Savannah's extra vote. So the only option of gauging would be Sophie Segretti.
Right.
And I think at this point, it's pretty obvious Sophie Segretti's in with that group, right? Like, Sophie's the one who came to them and was like, hey, they're voting for Savannah.
Right.
Like, Rizzo and Sage are, Jawan and Sage are not with you.
Mm-hmm.
And Sophie kind of been pushing that narrative for the last couple weeks now, too. So it makes it, like, there has to be another level to this. Mm-hmm. Unless it is the showmanship thing, which is very possible it is. But the way we've seen Rizzo play this game so far, I just feel like there has to be something strategic behind
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I feel like. There has to be something else behind it.
And at the same time, like I said, right, like, Nick misplays this real idol because of playing this fake idol.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be really confident in your ability to read people's reactions. And we've seen it, right? Like, we had, it was this week that Savannah mentioned the idea of, like, your experiences with other people and knowing how they talk, right? Like, seeing how they talk. Are they using their hand gestures more? Are they a little more emphatic than usual to tell if they're lying or not?
Right.
You have to be so confident in your ability to read people physically in order to use a fake idol to gauge whether or not you need to use a real idol.
Yeah, and even just using a real idol correctly on someone else, too. Mm-hmm. So, like, we are going to be watching the merge of Kageyan, Head of the Snake. It is the Sarah boot. And, you know, we have Tony and LJ with that double idol play and reading the room and the situation of who is the vote. So, make sure you watch that so you can listen to us this weekend. You really have to be able to read the room or specific people and focus on specific people's reactions.
Yeah, and I think it is kind of hard because of the showiness of Rizzo to figure out what he was doing there without him actually explaining it. And I also think it'll be hard because, you know, sometimes what people view what they're doing after the fact isn't actually what they're thinking at the time. So
yeah,
I really hope Rizzo does tell us what the thought process was behind here, but I also understand that he is on an upcoming season and his NDA is a little tighter than everyone else's, so we might have to wait a little while.
Well, I hope Rizzo tells us in confessional, at least.
I do too. I really hope there is something in this next, because of the visceral reaction from everyone, even like Jawan being like, bro, just play the real idol, right? I think there has to be something there. Like, there has to be some reason why he's doing this, and there has to be some conversation about it. At the very least, people are going to be like, bro, what the heck? Why did you have a fake idol? Like,
yeah.
I just want, like, even a conversation of Rizzo being like, you thought I had a real idol, but it wasn't this. But I'm pretty sure he's pulled out the idol previously and, like, shown it. So, like, you could tell it was different.
So, I mean, that is pretty much wraps up everything we've got here for our show. John, what else is happening in the Specialist universe?
Well, Phil and Will broke down, again, like, what is maybe the best episode of the season so far on Wednesday. Have a listen to what they have to say. There's this real contentious conversation between them about, like, who's right, who's wrong, as Phil and Will are wont to do, in which they're discussing who made the bad move, right? Who is making the bad move? Because they've kind of flip-flopped on when Sage and Jawan have made bad moves, so it's kind of linked to this point. So that's a very interesting conversation. Phil was joined by Ollie from Survivor Now on Digging Deeper yesterday. So the very interesting perspective of, like, that international Survivor perspective coming over from the UK. So give that a listen. Ollie's got some great takes there. McKenna and Kyle just broke down the latest episode of The Amazing Race earlier today. Just give that a listen to. Phil will be joined by Omar on Sunday for the Predictions of Power rankings. Have to, you know, we're just avoiding that, all that Thanksgiving nonsense by getting all of our international people in there to really showcase Survivor this week. I think Tegwith has a Matt chat at some point, but never know. So
yes, I believe she does. I believe it's confirmed, and I believe it's Jake actually this week.
Jake actually this time. Cool. So like the video, subscribe to the channel, ring the bell for notifications so you know when Tegwith goes live with that Matt chat, or when I accidentally set our podcast for 3 hours later because sometimes converting Pacific time to Eastern time is hard. So you actually know when we go live, and become a patron. Listen to us talk about Kageyan over on Patreon.
Half off till the finale.
Half off till the finale. It's a great time to get on there. Plus, there's just so much content. There is content every single day of the week over on Patreon. So make sure you do that. And we will see you next week as we start getting to the, we're at the pointy end of the stick here. Well, we're getting to the anti-penultimate episode next week. So let's see what Survivor 49 has in store for us moving forward.
Goodbye, everyone.